G'day, I'm Kevin Sanders, and welcome to the Business Architecture Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about all things business architecture so that business owners can truly get on the front foot and start creating more time in their life to do the things they want, build reliable cash flow to do those things with, drive scalable value into the marketplace while allowing them to step back and ultimately architect the business of their dreams. So without further ado, let's get into this next episode. Welcome back to the Business Architecture Podcast. My name is Kevin Sanders, and if you haven't heard or listened to any other episodes in this channel, I warmly welcome you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you haven't listened to any other ones, like I said, you know, go back and have a listen to some of those. It starts to describe and contextualize a few of the things that I think about and how I operate and the philosophies of business that I look to promote. It also describes the thesis of what I believe the future of work looks like, which I think is going to play a massive part in the future of organizations and how we do things in the world. So I think for this one, there's three culture episodes that have been posted up now. I think there's so much to talk about when it comes to, you know, building a culture or the heart of the organization, which I've said in past episodes is an attempt to reposition what it is. To make it more palatable for people, because culture feels a little bit yucky sometimes. So we tend to, you know, have a very, very quick perception of what culture is. So if we reposition it as the heart of the organization, we can begin to form what culture we do want rather than just try and pick at the things we don't want, which ultimately doesn't really necessarily mean that we end up with the things we want. Working on the things we don't want doesn't really leave us with the things that we do want. The way that we get the thing we want, either the way we build the heart of the organization or the culture that we do want, is to actually just build it. So the one for this, the episode, the context and the focus for this episode, I think, off the back of the last episode, which was about the management split and talking about the authority-based and the responsibility-based manager, one being old school, one being the new way. And the responsibility-based manager, you know, encapsulating or being integrated with leadership rather than the two functions being separated. In line with that, I think, and trying to now make this somewhat utility-based for you in your business, what I'll go through is some of the concepts and you know, assets and these sorts of things that I talk about a lot when I'm working with businesses to help them form the heart of their organization. So I'll categorize it into three main things. So if you're following along and you have a pad and a pen in front of you, which I would highly recommend, writing things every single day. It's surprising what you can uncover, what you can learn by just writing. It's a really, really, really great habit to get into. But there's three main categories here. So the first one is going to be about learning, a learning organization and what that whole part looks like and how we can start to bring that through and why it's important. The second one is about a way of being, and it's an African philosophy. It's not new. I didn't make it up. There's plenty on the internet about it if you would care to go and do your own kind of research, but I'll cover it off here because I think it really has a strong alliance with how we're working as an organization and working as a world moving forward, and it's called Ubuntu. So to spell it would be U-B-U-N-T-U, Ubuntu. It's an African philosophy, and I'll talk a little bit about that and how that starts to look in an organization. And then the third one that I'll talk about is the first asset of business architecture. So the things that I actually teach and facilitate and educate and talk about, these business assets, the five big assets that I talk about, the first one is philosophy. So I'll start to go into a little bit of that because philosophy actually has a big part of what we're talking about when it comes to culture or the heart of the organization or the heartbeat of the organization. So it would be handy to, like I said, to go back to the past few episodes and just and listen to those as well. It's a bit of listening involved, absolutely. And I do tend to talk quite fast. My head works quite fast, and so you know, when I'm sort of recording a podcast episode, I tend to just share my thoughts. I don't script anything. So, but if you go back and listen to a few of those episodes, it sets a bit of the context for what I'm about to talk about up, makes it a little bit more easier to understand and see what I'm trying to depict here. Obviously, this is voice only. I don't have a whiteboard in front of me where I could draw. I'm very visual by nature and I like to draw things, but this is another way to do it, and it's a decent challenge, so I'll do my very best. So the first thing, learning. Like, if we look at, if we just take human beings back to fundamental at the very start, fundamental basis at the very start, as a baby, or, you know, as I recently learned, the Scottish, and you know, the Scottish like to use the word bairn, which is awesome. I love that. But babies, and as they become older, they, you know, become infants and they turn into children and kids. And as they go through that process, we see that there's actually quite a very natural curiosity that appears in kids. And it's actually quite mesmerizing. If you ever watch a kid be curious about something, and the process that they go through naturally, we don't teach them how to be curious, they just do it naturally, it's already there. And the process that they go through to understand things and to discover the world, there's so much to see and feel and smell and taste and do in the world, you know, it can be a little bit overwhelming for them sometimes, I think, but they naturally are learning machines. They're learning creatures. And human beings at the basis and fundamentals of who we are as a being is, you know, that we enjoy learning. And I think, you know, by the nature of, you know, our education systems and that sort of thing, we may have shaped learning into something that goes away from how we naturally like to learn. But is not ineffective in itself. It's still an effective tool, but I think there's also a lot of space to play in learning the way that we naturally want to learn. And so there's learning becomes a very, very important part of the heartbeat of an organization, because it's something that we love to do. If you ever note or noticed, or if you can relate to a time when you or someone you know has been in a job or been in a position where it's kind of, you know, it may have paid well, so it was worth doing, but it was almost like boring because it wasn't challenging, it wasn't new for you, you weren't learning, it was almost like dead-endish, you know, in that kind of position, you'll quickly find that people start to disengage and turn off and don't want to become, better versions of themselves by the nature of the very position that they're in. And it's when you shut that learning capability down, and I'm not a psychologist by any means, so I'm sure psychologists and the such would have much more in-depth insight into how this process works. But when we shut that learning capability down, we start to shut down the human integration and human interaction within an organization, because we love to learn. And so there's three typical ways that I've seen in an organization that we can encourage learning. The first one is obviously the kind of education system methodology, which is, you know, when you go to school, to be taught by a teacher. So the first way of learning is to be taught. I don't really think at the heart of being a human being, when we examine it that closely, being taught is, I don't really think it is the most effective way to learn something. It's important because we need to be able to transmit information and data that is fundamental to all the things that we're trying to learn and create knowledge around. So to be taught things is important. We need to know things. But in terms of learning, I don't think it's the most effective, but it is a useful tool. So the first way we go about learning is to be taught. Someone who knows something, please teach me the thing you know. The second way we find learning start to really become a good part of an organization is when you encourage a get in and do kind of attitude, which is to say that, hey, it's okay, I'm going to give you permission to bugger this up, right? It's okay if you get in and give it a crack and it doesn't work, we'll stand back up, dust ourselves off, regather our resources and go again. In the falling down is when the learning happens. In the failure is when the learning happens. And that's not new. I think, you know, we hear it so many times, so many people say it. In the failings of what you would attempt is where you learn how to better attempt. And so to get in and do and just to give it a good old crack is a great way to learn something. If you succeed, then you've just learnt what works. If you don't succeed, then you've learnt what doesn't work. And when you learn what doesn't work, then you have the opportunity then to learn another way, another method, another process perhaps, and figure out another way that could work. And so that's a great way to learn, is to get in and do. But I think sometimes, you know, fear in an organization from a business point of view so starts to take over. We start to look at potential costs and the such of just getting in and giving it a crack. And so we can potentially start to hold back that integration of action that we can have within us, especially for people who are entrepreneurial by nature. They just want to get in and do stuff. When we start to take that away, which means that we're also cutting away that method of learning. And so we've got, you know, being taught and getting in and doing. I think they're two interesting ways to learn something. But what I've found, and for people who are in the teaching space, the third way to learn something is probably the best, well, one of the best ways to learn something really, is to contribute, to share, to teach, to facilitate. Being taught can teach you things, but teaching gives you all sorts of insight, because when you're being taught, that's signals that are being generated outside of you and being transmitted to you. Teaching is when you're taking the chaos inside of your head and transmitting that out. And if it's chaotic inside your head, in order to be able to transmit it out into you know, something that someone else can learn something by, that means you've got to bring order to that chaos. And in bringing order to that chaos, you learn a lot of things. And so what we find, you may even relate to yourself listening to this, there might be a time where you've been teaching someone something, or you've been explaining something to someone, or facilitating something to someone. And in teaching, explaining, or facilitating that thing, you've actually learned something more about the thing you're teaching, explaining, or facilitating. You probably may have even learned more about that than the person you were talking to. You might walk away from a conversation where you're explaining something and, you know, think to yourself, geez, that even just put a piece of the puzzle in place for me. So teaching and explaining and facilitating and contributing and encouraging all of that is a great way for people to learn. It also gets people into the realm of expression, where they can express their thoughts, they can bring their thoughts out, they can share what they're thinking, feeling, and seeing, and that opens up a whole new world into who they are, which again is another learning. So I think there's some common things that we can think about. How do we create a learning organization and a learning culture? How does the heartbeat of our organization encapsulate a learning philosophy? And that can often, you know, I often encourage, if we have various parts of a business, I'll often encourage, you know, bring them all into a room and encourage each of the parts of the business to teach everyone about another part of the business. So we might bring production into a room and you know, marketing into a room and the sales team into a room and a management team into a room, and I'll ask the sales team to teach everyone about production. And of course, it creates a little bit of chaos, but it also teaches the person, so the sales team, it'll also teach them more about production, because teaching is a great way to learn. And so what it does is it allows that collaboration, that learning collaboration, and that interactability to form, and that becomes a very, very staple foundation of a really powerful culture, is that sort of interaction between the parts. And that's one way that we go about doing that. Another thing that we think about is if I just run on that thought, another thing to think about is KPIs, and I'll talk about KPIs in another episode. I think it's deserving of an episode of its own. But essentially, you know, KPIs don't go away with the level of responsibility that you have, and that's another powerful tool. And it's without the right framework, it can become overwhelming for people who are in management chains up the chain. So there's a bit more to talk about that, but it's a great way to collaborate and have that interaction and that learning interaction sort of develop is to have KPIs that belong to everyone, not just one person. So that's learning. That's that whole category of learning, and you know, I can talk a little bit more about that if people want to know a little bit more about that. But I think it's really, really important. We need to understand how we can bring a learning culture into a business, into an organization, because learning is an important part of moving forward, especially when things are chaotic. We naturally want to learn so we can understand how to better be in the world. So that then takes me into the next category. So that's learning. So the next category, the humanity, a way of being, and the Ubuntu. So this is an African philosophy. Ubuntu was originally sort of brought to life, you know, in the wider world through Nelson Mandela when he was in charge of South Africa, and you know, he took it upon his responsibility to create peace and harmony throughout the whole nation rather than, you know, continue it on its way of being very, very segregated and very, very combative. And subjectively, you could probably say he was quite successful. He did some good work there. I'm by no means an expert in that area and that topic, but I think, you know, especially when you look at what he started and the very fact that people still know and remember who he is right now, I think that speaks to what he was able to do, even if it wasn't finished or whatever it might have been. But essentially, Ubuntu is a way of being. It's humanity, and what it does is it essentially promotes that I am because we are, and I'm not threatened by you because I'm only where I am because you are where you are. And I'm only successful when you're successful. So what it promotes is this way of being, a very collaborative, humanistic way of being where we can live in support of each other, in collaboration with each other, in contribution to each other, and in a way that fosters a very, very togetherness kind of feel rather than a segregated kind of feel. And so how that starts to look in an organization, if we look at organizations now, and they're often split up into multiple elements and parts, we need to understand that when an organization is split up into many elements and parts, we take away that interaction. And when we take away the ability to interact, that's when the cracks begin to form. And we see inefficiencies forming because of the interaction of the parts being ineffective, even if we work on each of the parts and make them absolutely amazing. So, and that's, you know, systemic thinking, that's systems thinking at its heart. But Ubuntu essentially comes in and promotes that kind of collaboration, the leadership of self and the leadership of others. It promotes that, you know, if you want to be a leader of others, you need to firstly be a leader of self, and you need to understand how you're interacting with the world and how the world is showing up is a reflection of you. This also then starts to oppose hierarchy, and this is why I talk about in previous episodes about org charts and how they establish a hierarchy and reporting lines and that sort of stuff. Ubuntu doesn't say, you know, it doesn't say, you know, do away with that, but it does say that just because I report to you doesn't make you better than me. I support you and you support me. And I think that's the philosophy of what that's bringing through is fundamentally critical to the organization moving forward. If you know, like I keep saying, We're moving into a couple of new ages, the rise in the technology and automation age, and the rise of the rehumanization of work age. When we're collaborating those two ages, it's important to understand the fact that, you know, we as human beings, we still want to feel like we're a part of something. We're a part of a community. We're being cared for. We matter. Our words are being heard. And so that's where Ubuntu starts to come through as an important philosophy of business. So that's the second category. Critical. And I know, I'm going on to 20 minutes here. I didn't want to go too long. But I'll quickly touch on the third category that I've got here, which is philosophy. And philosophy will be explored a hell of a lot more in depth in later episodes as I go through the five assets of business architecture. But philosophy, it's the energetic asset of an organization. Its core commercial purpose is to tell the world why the world should care about your organization. Tells the market why they should care. It's not about a big vision or a big goal or you want to help 60 million people by the year 2028 to put, you know, flowers in the ground and whatever else. Like, that's all important and that's all goal and vision related, but philosophy is the overarching energetic understanding purpose of why we exist in the first place. And so we look at all sorts of things, the bigger picture of that organization in terms of its environment. We look at, you know, where it wants to go, the impact that it wants to create, the person who started the organization. It's about understanding what drives them, what motivates them, and then bringing that through as an energetic motivator to everything within the organization, including its environment and market. But philosophy, it's the big energetic understanding asset of what an organization is all about. That leads from a business perspective of philosophy and encapsulates learning. It encapsulates things like Ubuntu, and starts to prioritize the personal philosophy of people in the organization. Like I said in the last episode, if business doesn't grow people, people won't grow the business. And as a business grows, if you're the owner of a business, you can't do it all by yourself. You must rely on your people, your team. But if you don't grow and support and have empathy and understanding, care and love and kindness for your team, they're not going to care about growing your business. And so your business will start to be held back by a lack of philosophy. And I often also say that, you know, because often the go-to solution when a business is seen to be ineffective or inefficient is to try and bring through systems and processes. But again, systems and processes are only as effective as the behavior of the people within them. And behavior is culture in action, or behavior is a reflection of the heartbeat of the organization, which is the culture. So making sure that at a personal level for every single person, the philosophy of the organization is also taking care of each person. And it's important to establish that. There's a bit of work in establishing the philosophy in an organization. You can tell when a philosophy of an organization has been well identified and articulated. As reflection work for yourself, listening to this, you know, you'll know organizations in the world that you naturally gravitate to, that you like, and there are organizations in the world that might be doing a good job, but you don't necessarily like what they're about, and so you won't follow them anyway. So, philosophy is really, really critical. When we combine it with the next asset, which is positioning, that creates what we call brand. And brand is the holistic experience that one has when they interact with your business, right from the very start, before they even talk to you, till the very end, after they finish talking with you. Then brand is very, very critical, but we'll go into that a little bit later. So they're the three big categories of bring through the future of the heart of the organization, and, you know, with utility, it's the learning organization trying to understand that, hey, you know, the one of the best ways to learn something is to teach something. So have people start expressing and teaching and facilitating and explaining and sharing their thoughts, You know, rather than just trying to teach them what to do and then making them do it, let them teach you what to do and then and let them guide themselves there. And as the leader, you can help guide that journey to get them where they need to go. The second category was Ubuntu, the humanity, a way of being, promotes collaboration, is all about I am because we are. I'm not threatened by you because your success determines my success. And you know, the general sort of humanity way of being, it's all about not just self, but you know, all about others. It's about self through others, and it can oppose hierarchy, but not in a dismissive way, but in a way that it can make hierarchy useful moving forward. And then there was philosophy, setting context, understanding what this company, this business is all about, what its environment is, and what all of that looks like moving forward. Remember, like I said, if business doesn't grow the people won't grow the business. So I think that's a good way to end this episode, 25 minutes. Thank you very much for sticking with this episode. If there are any questions, please feel free to reach out. And if, you know, like I said in the last episode, if you're seeing the cracks form in what, you know, in your business through the culture, people are wanting to leave and these sorts of things are happening, shoot through a message. Let's get a conversation moving. Like I said, I'm not here to sell you anything. That's not my intent. I don't want to sell you anything. I just want to build bloody great businesses. You know, if that means that, you know, we do something together for a little bit to make that happen for you and bring your magic out into the world, then so be it. But at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about you, and my success comes through your success. So if you got any questions, shoot them through. And thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you in the next episode. All right, take care. Bye. Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the Business Architecture Podcast. As the owner of a business, I've got no doubt that you will have figured out that knowledge isn't actually power, it's potential power. And the most powerful thing we can do with knowledge is to take action with it. So with that being said, as questions have come up for you around how to take any action with or implement anything from this episode, please feel free to connect with me and I'll do my very best to answer those questions for you. You can find me on LinkedIn under my name, Kevin Sanders, or you can look me up in my profile, which is Your Excellence on LinkedIn as well. Also, don't forget to bookmark or favorite this podcast so that you can be made aware of when a new episode goes live. And of course, if you happen to know any other business owners that are doing it tough, they're frantic, they're anxious, cash flow poor, or on the other side of that, they just really want to unleash their business, please do a good thing and share this with them so that they can get the benefit from it too. I don't bite, but I do grow businesses, so I look forward to speaking with you soon.